From WXXI News, this is Arts Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. The Smith Opera House in Geneva is a landmark, but it's been a landmark without air conditioning for years, and that means it becomes a hothouse in the summer. The unfortunate climate has prevented the Smith from enjoying summer concerts with much regularity, but that has finally changed. The Smith has temperature control, and it has a long-awaited summer calendar of events. This half hour, we welcome Jan Regan, who has helped put the event schedule together. She has the responsibility of reaching out to musicians, and she knows the history of the Smith. I suppose if you live in Geneva, you know that Bruce Springsteen has played at the Smith. But I didn't know, you know, and I've only lived in Rochester 11 years and been down there. There are some big names that have been there.
Oh, yeah. Bruce Springsteen kicked off his Born to Run tour, but I believe that was his second visit to the Smith Opera House. He had loyal fans, and it was a packed house, from my understanding, but he wasn't the household name that he is today, of course.
Well, but at the same time, Born to Run would have been 80, 81, 82?
No, we're
82?
In the 70s.
Is that Born to Run in the late 70s?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, so he's on his way.
Right.
And now the capacity for the Smith is, you said, what, 1,400?
It's about 1,400, a little under 1,400.
At the time, would have been roughly the same?
Probably was. Yeah, yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah, I actually have a tape of the show. Which is not a very good tape.
A cassette tape or an 8-track?
Well, it's been converted to a CD.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
Which says a lot about us, by the way, that we think converting to CD sounds modern. Now that's still, kids think that's outdated. You know?
That's as good as we got so far on that particular archival feature.
So you've had Springsteen. I look at your list of who's been there. I think the Avett Brothers are huge. They're a little less of a household name, but who else has been there at the Smith?
Oh, Itzhak Perlman. Let's see. Oh, we've had a lot of classical, Simone Dinerstein. Boy, it should roll off the tip of my tongue. Well, recently we've had Jason Isbell was just there. That's another. I find a lot of our best shows are not necessarily household names. They're the type of names that have a really loyal following. Mm-hmm. And other people trust the Smith and the programming and so forth enough to try it out. And he gets some, you know, the performer gets some new fans. So Jason Isbell is a good example. He came, we had maybe 800 people, which was really fantastic.
Sure.
That was just in February, and he's playing CMAC this summer. So, you know, he's definitely on his way up. We got him at a great time.
Well, and we're going to get to the schedule coming up throughout the summer in just a moment, because there are a couple of names on that list that, for me, were sort of jaw-droppers, but they may be a little less mainstream. We'll talk about that in a second. I'm curious to know, the big change is the air conditioning. What is a show like Bruce Springsteen like before all these renovations?
Well, it's like in the fall.
Yeah, it's back when you're not melting.
Exactly. Yeah. We have always had some things happen at the Smith over the summer, but the classic event is high school graduations, and they will continue this year in much greater comfort.
Oh,
you
the
can
parents
imagine.
Are so happy for that.
Oh, right? it's so packed. But, yeah, we really haven't been able to program because of the lack of air conditioning. You know, a band would not be interested in playing. An audience member wouldn't be interested in sitting. So this summer, thanks to some major fundraising and a great grant from the Dormitory Authority of New York State that was secured by Senator Mike Nozzolio for us, we were able to do the work and get air conditioning going, and we're really trying to celebrate it with a good lineup of programming for the summer.
Whenever you talk about renovating and improving something that's historic, there's always the concern to do it in a way that is effective and efficient without losing the character of it.
Oh, that's such a great point. We did have several people look at it, and we're all very proud of the way it's been done without any real evidence. And they even used some of the, from my understanding, some of the old ducts and things that were in existence in the structure already. So even when it was first presented to us, they said, this isn't going to be the perfect, like, Ramada Inn or whatever air conditioning. You may find pockets that are warmer
sure.
or cooler, but the building is as it was, and it's actually very, very comfortable with that air conditioning on.
Well, it should be no surprise for our listeners that, well, with Jan, our guest is the chair of the programming committee for the Smith Center for the Arts. That's the official name, by the way. Now, the Smith Center for the Arts is just, it's often known as just the Smith or Smith Opera House.
Exactly,
okay.
Right, yeah.
And it should be no surprise that you're able to score such great acts because, can you tell our listeners who your brother is?
Oh, jeez.
Well, I feel like, you know, that's how you must be getting these great acts.
Oh, yeah. I do get a lot of great ideas from my brother, Scott Regan, who has open tunings in the morning here at WRUR and WRTH.
And I'm not giving him your credit for the work you're doing.
No, but he is a big help to us. We get lots of great ideas from his show and David Dye's show and other NPR programming. And also what I love about WRUR, WXXI, et cetera, et cetera, WEOS, is the willingness to help promote some of these shows by bringing on the artists and by just making people aware of them. It makes such a difference in getting the word out on concerts.
And this is a big season because with this air conditioning, it's really your first programmable summer season where you don't have to be too concerned about melting in there.
Exactly.
And so it's exciting. In fact, you got started just got started last weekend, and now you've got a bunch coming up. And let's kind of go down the list and talk about what's coming up. Coming up tomorrow, Saturday the 7th, you've got The Lone Bellow.
The Lone Bellow, yes. They are kind of an Americana type of small group. It should be a nice, intimate show. We're opening. There happens to be on the streets of Geneva that night, because Geneva is a cool, as an air-conditioned and just cool kind of town. There's a rosé festival, a wine festival.
I love that.
Yeah, right on Linden Street, which is around the corner from the Smith. You'll see the tickets will be for sale there if you haven't picked one up already. So you can go right from there into our great venue. And we have an opener, Roses in Revolution, who were so kind as to rename themselves Rosé and Revolution just for this show and in honor of the Rosé Festival.
Here's why I think the Rosé Festival is so exciting for a wine geek and a wine lover and a writer like me. Very strangely, this winter, the Finger Lakes is making very good rosé now. And rosé, when you think about pink wine, by the way, I grew up, when I was in college, I remember I had a date in college and I thought, got to get a bottle of wine. What's the only wine out there? Well, of course, it's White Zinfandel, and, you know, that's what we grew up on, right? No, dry rosé is perfect for summer wine. And I'm not a big fan of the notion that all wine is seasonal, you know, white wine in the summer, red wine in the winter. I don't believe that. I do tend to drink rosé when it's warmer. So the Finger Lakes wanted to highlight their rosé, and they had a big writer's kind of a forum and have a chance to taste everything. They did it this year in February, and there was a snowstorm, and I couldn't even get down there. And I thought, number one, the writers can't even get there. You got 6 inches of snow. And number two, this is not a night for drinking rosé. So the Rosé Festival in Geneva.
Yes.
Perfectly
right
timed.
Around the
yeah, this is when you want rosé.
Exactly, exactly. And that's part of the Wine Symposium, which is the next event actually is kind of a part of the Wine Symposium also. So, there's a lot of intermingling of great things happening in Geneva.
I'm looking at, down the list here at the Smith, the 14th of June, Tapas and Tango. What's going on?
Yeah, now that is in conjunction with Geneva Music Festival also, which is a group of classical musicians who do a series of chamber concerts, and they're kind of breaking out a little bit to do this tango thing, and we took them on as part of what we call our Smith Club series, which are smaller shows that we present in wineries and other locations, cool clubs, things like that. So this is at Ravine's Wine Cellars, and it features the chamber musicians along with a classical guitar player. And this is what you get to learn when you start working on these things, a bandoneon player, which I had never heard of bandoneon, but it is a classical tango instrument. And they're going to do really a concert. It's not so much a dance, but it will be, it's in conjunction with the Wine Symposium in that it's an extra event that people will probably go to right from the Wine Symposium. So should be a great night out there in the middle of the vineyard.
Bandoneon. I love it.
Bandoneon.
Very cool.
It's like an accordion, actually.
Very cool.
You can just say cool accordion, and you'd probably have it covered.
The first day of summer, and the longest daylight day of the year, you've got an act. This was the one that I saw, and I went, "Wow, you've got Iron and Wine," and which is so exciting for me. I've loved Iron and Wine for years. Iron and Wine's really, I think, it's just one guy.
Right.
He's fabulous.
That's going to be a great show. It's really getting a lot of attention. So if you haven't gotten your tickets, you should run out and buy them.
You better.
And I have to give a little nod to Dan Smalls, who this is a Dan Smalls Presents show. We have one other in the summer too. We're really happy to have him be a part of our program as well. So it's good to have him join us for a cool summer.
All right, so let's go down the list. We'll hit him a little quicker now as we go down throughout the out the summer, because if you do want to check out the full list, I'm sure you can do that online at thesmith.org. There it is.
You got it.
Thesmith.org. Yep. What stands out to you going down the list here, Jen?
All right. There are lots of little things and a couple big things. I'm going to go to another,
sure.
The Stray Birds, which is is another Smith Club series that's going to take place at Billsboro Winery, another Americana-type group. They are just really taking over and doing just great things, and we're thrilled that they're coming to Geneva. We actually had them, some people may remember, and one of the poor band members got sick, so they rescheduled, and we're glad that they could do it during the summer because it would be an extra special night. But the one I really want to highlight, because we were so proud that we were able to get her, is Roseanne Cash, and she is going to actually close out our summer season on August 21st. There's a meet and greet ahead of time that you can sign up for and spend a little time with Roseanne, have a glass of wine with her, and it should be a really great show. We've got a beautiful Steinway piano, a concert piano that was donated to us many years ago that's been, you know, meticulously cared for, and I really think that's the tipping point that got her to come, because they asked if we have a piano. So she'll be behind our Steinway, and that will be a fantastic show.
What would you want to talk to Roseanne Cash about?
Oh, boy. Lots of things, I think. Her upbringing and a lot of this, her new CD actually reflects on some of that, her upbringing in the South and, you know, being a musician's daughter. I love the list personally, her CD before this one. And I think one of my questions would be, where's the rest of the list? Because I love the, 15 songs on there. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear the next, 85, because she said there were 100 songs on her father's list presented to her as things that she should know.
That's a cool story. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very cool story. And I also want to touch on the fact that if you haven't been to the Smith, you know, you're doing some of these events at the Smith, obviously. I look at your August 8th event with the Stray Birds at Billsboro. Billsboro is a winery that is probably technically Geneva. It's just south of the city of Geneva, on Route 14. And it is one of the really neat tasting rooms and spots. They do a lot of artist events and things like that.
Yeah.
So what a great way to branch out.
In fact, the Stray Birds, I think we could have brought them to a place that would allow us to bring more people. But I just felt that was a perfect match. It is a really warm and cozy kind of tasting room. They've got patios and a wood-burning fire outside for pizza making and so forth. So it seemed like a great match.
We're talking to Jan Regan, who is the chair of the programming committee for the Smith Center for the Arts, the Smith Opera House in Geneva, all excited about their air conditioning and their full slate of summer events that you can check out at thesmith.org. And here on this Arts Friday, we're running down a few of them. Now, back when I played in a band, I've played in a band for here and there. Don't ask for any recordings, Jan. Most of that will never see the light of day. But one of the fun parts about being in a band, whether you're serious or not, is coming up with a band name, right? And so one of the things that we did in college was we created a bunch of nouns and adjectives and all these things, and we tried to figure out how do you put them together and come up with a fun, cool name, et cetera. And it sounds to me like your July 5th event is one of those things that it could have been a funky band name that
I remember.
It's called Neutral Milk Hotel. What is it?
Yeah, I have to confess, it's one of those bands that I should have known and didn't. But they had a very famous and well-received album a few years ago, and then they disbanded.
Okay.
And they're doing a reunion tour, actually. And apparently, this is going to be one of their last shows or last times out. They just wanted to get out and play it again, and they're going to break again after that. So,
wow.
That's one to do a little research on, because people say, you know, that album was one of the best albums. And now it's not even coming into my head. It's something to do with an airplane. Everyone out there listening is going yelling it at the radio. But it's very famous, especially among a cultish kind of group.
So they broke up. They come back together for a short time.
Yeah, I think about a year. Yeah,
it reminds me of one of my favorite bands from 20 years ago, Toad the Wet Sprocket. And Toad the Wet Sprocket is actually back together with a new album out right now, and they're doing a little touring, and it might just be for a short time, who knows, but it's always interesting to see those bands that have these bursts, and then they either flame out or they sort of fade away, and then maybe with a little wisdom do we all get a little wiser with some time, and maybe some differences that might have led to division, you put those differences behind you, right?
You reunite, right?
You reunite, yeah. Now, the Smith is an interesting venue in that it's easy to book a stadium, a Blue Cross Arena. You know the acts that are going to sell there. And it's probably not that difficult to book a smaller place that's a little more intimate. But at 1400, that's probably a little bit more of a challenge to figure out what works there.
Yeah, that's definitely true. We're not going to get, you know, what comes to CMAC. They're not going to come to us. And in part because the stage, you know, the backstage, it doesn't accommodate everything they need. But also, the ticket price would be ridiculous.
Yeah, right.
So we do have to find the right level. And I feel like we're really on a great path with that. Getting the Avett Brothers, that kind of was the beginning, because they brought their own crowd. And we were pretty much, we sold out right away on that one. And we can't get them now because they're in the stadiums.
They
now.
Are.
So yeah, but you know, we find these bands that have big followings, and they're sort of up and coming in some ways, and you start hearing them on late night shows, on Colbert or on Open Tunings, and you recognize, you start hearing them more than one time, and pretty soon, even though a lot of people wouldn't know them, you can see the trend. And that's when we start making the inquiries to see if we can get them to come.
And so do you consider the Smith still intimate? Is it too big to be intimate? You still feel like it's intimate?
Yeah, I am really a fan of small concerts. That's why I love the Smith Club Series. But you can't, you, there's, you know, as they say at most places like the Smith, there's really no bad seat. I mean, even if you're in the upper, you know, back of the balcony, it's a great view. The acoustics are phenomenal for live music. It's just, so you feel like you're right there, and you actually can be right there. You know, it's not hard to get down in front and get in early and get a seat. We do a lot of general admission, but every once in a while, Iron and Wine, for example, is a seated buy your ticket for a certain seat.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a small space in part because the sound is so good, and you really can find yourself pretty close up.
When you look at the different acts that can come there, it has to be pretty exciting, but also an important challenge to figure out who you want to book. Because I think about, obviously, we opened the conversation mentioning that the Boss was there, Bruce Springsteen in the late 70s, obviously before he was as huge as he was and is. But, with your sensibility with music, probably with Scott's, with mine, all sort of similar, and you're looking for somebody who fits that intimate vibe, but might be on the cusp of something bigger. I mean, I would imagine that probably Ray LaMontagne's probably too big for the Smith, but a few years ago, he might have been more in line with that. And so you're kind of looking at what's the next Ray LaMontagne, what's the next Avett Brothers, that
right,
kind of thing.
Right, exactly. And we have a great committee that throws names. A lot of it's blue skying, kind of saying, wouldn't it be great if we could get, so-and-so. But all the time we get a name that not everyone knows, and somebody on the committee does know and, you know, follows that band. And that's really what it takes, a lot of different people putting in some ideas and getting thoughts as to who we might bring. You know, and if they make it, you know, that's fantastic, but it's anyone's guess, you know.
Is it thrilling when you reach out to the Iron and Wines of the world and you get a thumbs up? That's got to be a thrill.
Oh, it definitely is. It can also be really nerve-wracking, though, because you get some of these big bands, and obviously you're in for paying them.
And they're getting paid.
Yeah, we watch those ticket sales very closely because their money comes to them, obviously, you know. And these are especially shows that we do ourselves, you know. We have to pay all the upfront costs and so forth. And there's more than just paying the band. There's paying the sound. There's making sure they have a hotel room and meals and, you know, which when it all works out, it's just a thrill. But there are a lot of nail-biting moments. People buy tickets late in the running, we find. But, yeah.
Buy your tickets early.
It's just so satisfying.
Just because I don't want Jan to feel the stress.
Oh, yeah. And our executive director, Kelly Bradley, you know, we confer often every day getting ticket counts and so, yeah. And I have to say, people who buy tickets, they're our heroes. I mean, it's hard to do the kind of programming, any programming, if you don't have people out there willing to buy the tickets. So, you know, just keep for at the Smith and any place that offers live music. I mean, you know, support it because that's how it happens.
Well, let me, as we continue our conversation on Arts Friday here with Jan Regan from the Smith in Geneva, let's begin to wrap with a look at first the Smith and then Geneva in general, because we do have an audience. We're thrilled to be on WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM out of Geneva. And that's a great partnership for us. So a lot of our Finger Lakes listeners know you very well there. Rochester, I think obviously many folks from Rochester do, but some may not. And if you've never been to the Smith, give us a little picture of it.
Yeah, it's a beautiful building. It's been probably about 15 years ago or so. It did have a major renovation where we brought it back up to kind of a mix of its history because it opened as an opera house. It was also...
Opened when, by the way?
In somewhere like 1894,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, late 1800s, right?
Yeah, it was quite... so it's, you know, well, way over 120 years old. So that's not good quick math there, but... So a lot of the renovations then went back to what the place looked like back when it was first opened, including pulling down an old movie marquee so that you could see the actual facade. But inside, there was a period where the Shrine Movie House, whatever their official name was, did run the Smith Opera House, and they put in all kinds of Art Deco details and things. So some of that got pulled up, too. So you walk in, and it's just like... beautiful and all really pristinely renovated. So it's just a really nice space, and it's right in the heart of downtown Geneva. There's, you know, if for people who haven't been to Geneva very often, it's really a great place to go. We have a new tagline for the city called Uniquely Urban, which it is because there's a lot of things happening, a lot of small restaurants and bars near the Smith, and you can walk around the block and go several places, and just a great little vibe to the place. It's definitely, you know, it's great to have Rochesterians coming to Geneva for our shows.
Well, you've set yourself up now, so tell a Rochesterian, if you're going to go out to the Smith, where are you, Jan, going to have dinner or coffee before?
Oh, boy. I love all our restaurants. I don't know that I can really name a specific. This is what I'll say,
though.
You
become a politician.
Yes, I know. No, there. All you have to do is get yourself to the Smith and look to the left or the right and start walking. You can walk around the block. You can go right next door. It's worth it to walk around the block but it's a small block. It's not as big as Rochester. So, and then there's a few places out of town, too, if it feels a little too crowded for you. Right on 14 or going up 5 and 20, you'll see lots of places. But within a block of the Smith, you'll find, you know, five or six great places to eat or have a drink.
And looking over the history of the Smith, opened, of course, as the Opera House, but it's been a movie house, as you said. It has hosted concerts from the big acts to burlesque, though burlesque
that's
doesn't,
going back a ways.
Burlesque doesn't always in the older days mean exactly what comes to mind immediately, I don't think.
Yeah, I think
it means more like
right.
vaudeville kind
yeah.
of stuff, right?
Yeah, I think so, but yeah.
You'd like to say yes for this setting here. But that history is still imbued in the Smith, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the Smith is just such a part of our community. It's obviously an arts kind of place, but as well, little things I mentioned before, high school graduations, meetings for, you know, our Muscle Man Triathlon take place there, dance recitals for local, you know, little kids dancing across our stage. It's very much a Geneva place, but it's bigger as well because we bring in shows, you know, that draw from the whole region and a lot of times beyond. So, it's just a great thing to have. That we really want to celebrate, especially this summer.
Well, congratulations on the renovations and the comfort that you're able to provide now. Air conditioning is a big deal. And you've got a chance now to have a full slate of summer events. It's at thesmith.org. Jan, it's great to talk to you and have a great summer out
there. Great. Thanks for having me, Evan. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Welcome back to Arts Friday on Connections. We're looking at a number of events in the town of Perry, New York. It's a rather short drive from Rochester, maybe 40 minutes or so, and really a beautiful community. The summer is a great time of year, even though the people from Perry say all year is a great time there. But the summer is really special. They do a lot of arts events, and we're focusing on a number of them, but we're going to start with looking at the Perry Chalk Art Festival. Before we get there, and we're going to be talking to the event coordinator, Megan Hauser, we have Jackie Billings Barlow here, who is the co-owner of the Hole in the Wall restaurant there. And Rochesterians either have never heard of it or they're sort of a cult following and they make the drive down there. And so Jackie's husband is the chef there. So it's always fun to ask someone who's married to a chef and who loves food outside of your own restaurant, what is the best restaurant meal you've ever had?
The best restaurant meal I've ever had outside of my own restaurant was when my husband was before I had decided to start stalking my husband so that he would marry me. He was the executive sous chef at a restaurant called the Valley Inn in Warsaw, New York. And I took another chef friend of mine who's actually featured in the event we're going to talk about, Brian Simmons, to the Valley Inn for a birthday dinner. And I asked Travis to just make us anything he wanted. And he made us like a 10-course meal with things I had never had before in my life. Like smoked oysters. And this was 10 years ago. This was a lot of food that I had never seen before. And that was the best meal. And I realized that didn't quite get you into another city, but
not about another city. It's about a memorable meal. And, did you know at the time, did your husband have the man who became your husband, did he have the reputation at that time?
Yeah. So Brian was a friend of mine. We were both discovering that there was red wine beyond Lambrusco.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
That if you used fresh herbs in culinary creations, that you could elevate the food. So this was the beginning of both of our culinary journey. And Travis was already doing this, you know, nearby.
Travis is the man who's now your husband.
Yeah, my husband, our executive chef at the restaurant, was doing this. And so this was a big birthday gift for my friend Brian, who was just on this culinary journey with me. But we were on letter A.
But you weren't
sure.
Dating this man, Brian.
No. We worked together.
You weren't dating
at a
this guy, Brian. You fall in love with the chef. You kicked your boyfriend.
I made it really clear to Chef Travis Barlow that I was single and available, and this is just a friend of mine who I care deeply about.
right there in that first meal?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
You were instantly smitten?
I had been smitten. This may have been a tactic, actually, to show that I could really be devoted to food as well.
Did he find you somewhat off-putting with your quasi-stalker tactics, or was he impressed?
I believe that when he finally did succumb and agreed to take me out on a date, he referred to me as that crazy girl who he just needed to tell we just had to be friends with. So, yeah.
He tried to friend zone you?
And that was a year later. That was a year after this meal. So, or maybe 2 years. I'm not sure.
So that's about 10 years ago now.
Right.
So that meal still in your mind. Mm-hmm. So you obviously were attracted to the guy, but you also fell in love with his ability. Sometimes I find those relationships are interesting, whether they're romantic relationships or friends, the ones that start with just an admiration of someone's vocation.
Yeah, and actually, truthfully, Travis taught me two things even before this meal, because I first met him at my first waitressing job, which was at the Art of Al, and he was an assistant chef there. And there was this pan of green beans that had been sautéed with almonds, and I hated green beans, and I was looking at them. They were so alluring, and I was, man, those look really good. And he said, well, why don't you try them? And I said, well, I don't like green beans. And he said, try the green beans. And I did, and they were delicious. And it was like, what else tastes this good? And the other thing he taught me there was how to saran wrap properly. How to saran wrap properly. Because you have to, you know, get the saran wrap to touch itself to actually close. But those are the two things.
Green beans and saran wrap. What a romantic story.
It was love at first wrap.
Love at first. Careful with this. This is public radio. Actually, you can share whatever you like. We can edit it out. We're talking to Jackie Billings Barlow. Her husband, Travis, is the chef at Hole in the Wall Restaurant, which has been open for how long in Perry?
So actually, the Hole in the Wall Restaurant started as the Perry Sandwich Shop in 1932 in Perry, right downtown on Main Street, 9 North Main Street. And it was just a sandwich counter that sat, it's debatable, 8 to 12 seats, and served. It was opened by Greek immigrants, and they served American food. But sometimes they'd slip in some Americanized versions of Greek food. And when World War II came, the owners, George Davolis, his sons, went off and fought in World War II. And while they were off fighting in World War II, any serviceman who came into the restaurant was clearly identified by their uniform. And George's wife and him decided that they would give them their meal on the house and wish them to get home safe. And this started a trend. And they ended up serving 2,955 free meals to servicemen during that effort. The Associated Press picked up the story, ended up in the Stars and Stripes. And people overseas would say, how do you find this Perry sandwich shop? And they'd say, well, it's just a hole in the wall on the side of the road. If you blink, you'll miss it when you're coming through the town. Because it literally was just a hole in the wall. And that came back to the original owner so many times that when his sons came home safely from the war, he decided to rename his restaurant The Hole in the Wall. And in the 60s, he tripled his size and started seating 30. And in 2001, the son Nicky, who was in World War II's son, decided to close the restaurant. And my mother said, you can't close this restaurant. It's part of our history. You can't write history better than that. And so she and my dad decided to buy it. And then at that time, our downtown was not the way it is today. And it wasn't going to survive where we were. So we decided to move it to our current location in May of 2004, actually 10 years ago. And we've been at our location for 10 years.
And how long has your husband Travis been there?
He joined our team in 2006.
2006. Mm-hmm. I don't say this lightly. I think our listeners know I love the good culinary scene. Hole in the Wall really is it's one of those restaurants that people go to and they say, wow, I had no idea. Especially, well, if you're in Perry, you know. But if you're in the surrounding area, if you're in Cast Isle, you know. But if you're in Rochester, do you love when people from Rochester come down and they say, I had no idea?
Absolutely. We love that. And the name really sets us up for really blowing people's expectations out of the water.
you've created this low expectations or just simple expectations. Probably.
It wasn't a strategy. It's really out of loyalty to the history because it's really honorable what they did. But where we've evolved to over time, I mean, obviously if you're in this industry and you care about food, then you're trying to do local food, you're trying to do local products. And that's what we do. We grow herbs, we grow vegetables, we raise honeybees. We respect the ingredients and create the best food that the ingredients are trying to instruct us to create. And by us, of course, I mean Travis. We have a couple of other guys in the back of the house. Tommy Hagen has been with us longer than Travis, but they have a really great symbiotic relationship where Travis and him know how to delegate those things out.
Jackie Billings-Barlow had no idea she'd be talking so much about a restaurant when she came in today. But I had to take the opportunity just because of how special a place that is. And so before we switch over to the Chalk Art Festival, just give me one thing on the menu right now that you think is a showstopper from Holden.
Oh, you know what? We just started doing brunch. We're doing brunch for the summer on Saturdays and Sundays. And we have blueberry pancakes with a lemon compound butter and local maple syrup made by my aunt and uncle. That is a reason to drop everything this Saturday and Sunday and drive directly down there. Absolutely. But aside from that, our farmer's market 3-course dinners will start as soon as the farmer's market starts. And those are fun. So that's like we go to the farmer's market in the morning, see what's there, see what's in our gardens, and create a 3-course prefix menu based on whatever's in Travis and Tommy's head and whatever the market showed us. So those are the best. Those are my two favorites right now.
We're going to continue the conversation with Jackie in a moment about some of the culinary art scene and really what's coming up. But let's turn it over to Megan Hauser, who's the event coordinator for the Perry Chalk Art Festival. Nearly a decade running now, and it's coming up July 12th. A lot of people try to mark it on their calendar. We wanted to give you some time in advance to think about it if it's something that you're interested in. And chalk art is something that I do with my 2-year-old. But when I saw the pictures of the Perry Chalk Art Festival, Megan, you've got some artists who are doing some really, really amazing things there.
It is. It's fun to come down and see, Evan. We have, at this point, the Chalk Festival, as you said, has been going on a number of years, and we now have a purpose-built area where the artists can work. So it's beautiful concrete. We give them some really nice supplies to work with. And we end up with about 32 to 35 really talented artists that come down and work on the Saturday.
What's the space? How big is the space that the artists are working in?
They're working in a 5x5, so it's also pretty exciting to see what someone can create in the time frame between 8:30 and 3 o'clock in a space that's that big.
Okay, and so July 12th, it's the Perry Chalk Art Festival. They start at 8:30 in the morning.
8:30, mm-hmm.
And obviously weather dependent, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And then by 3, they've got to be done.
Correct.
And then is there a big public unveiling, or how does it work in the afternoon?
Well, throughout the whole day, and that's what's fun for visitors, you can kind of stroll by the artists and see what they're doing. So you can see the very beginning, the bare bones of the artwork, all the way through the afternoon. So we try to provide things so that you can keep coming back.
Yeah.
So say in the morning, you might want to participate in the community bike ride we have. Then you can arrive at the plaza and see what the artists are doing. Then at some point in the afternoon, you might take part in the Taste of Summer for your lunch and then come back and see what the artists are doing. So you could be there all day and just see this art unfolding and see how the artist is working.
Is it a competition?
There is a competitive aspect. We do pay each artist because we think that's important to recognize what artists are doing and that they be compensated for their art. But we do have $500 worth of prize money that do go to the artists.
In looking at some of the work they've done in previous Perry Chalk Art Festivals, like I said, really intricate, really, really impressive. There was one that looked like I couldn't tell if it was a robotic dragon or if it was like a partially skeletally exposed dragon. It was so beautiful and weird and awesome. And I couldn't believe that was done in chalk in one day.
Yeah, so, and that's part of the fun, Evan, because we've been doing it for a number of years. We have local artists that have built their skills up. So the first year there was this, how do you work with these materials on this kind of surface? And now after 8 years, people know how to do that, can really make the chalk and the pastels do interesting things. You're talking about the Fitzsimmons Brothers piece from last year, where our theme was Believe It or Not. And Perry, of course, has a legend of the sea serpent, and they took the sea serpent.
Now, hold on, Megan. Okay. You say, of course, as if everybody listening, just everybody knows the Perry Sea Serpent. What is the legend?
Well, there's Loch Ness, and then there's the Perry Sea Serpent, of course.
And where does the Perry Sea Serpent live?
Well, we have Silver Lake in our area, and at some point in the history, I think it's about over 100 years ago, there was a sea serpent that started appearing on the lake, and it would be sighted here and there by boaters, by people that were having fun on the lake, just long enough to see it and then sink back under the surface. And this created a huge ruckus in Perry. The train lines brought people down, the hotels were filled, the restaurants were filled, and people sent out expeditions to try and capture this serpent, and it was not sighted.
Truly,
again.
Really?
Yeah.
Truly, really?
It was an amazing thing.
When was that all happening?
It was 1850s, I would say.
Okay. And this is not a big lake, by the way. Silver Lake
is big enough for a serpent.
I guess it's big enough for a serpent, but you'd think if it existed in there, it would be found. I mean, yeah. What's the length of the lake there?
I can't tell you that.
Not long, though. I mean, it's not like if you're used to Seneca Lake, Cayuga Lake, Cuca Lake. I mean, this is more like, you know, a very beautiful large pond.
Oh, we call it the last of the Finger Lakes, really.
No, it is. I'm with you on that. It's so cozy, actually. And it's just sort of down the hill, you know. It's just this really cool thing. So anyway, okay. So last
year. Do you want the rest of the serpent?
Well, now that we have the serpent history and the lore established, it was the theme was Believe It or Not last year.
So the Fitzsimmons brothers then took one side of the chalk, and their piece was actually 10 by 5 because they took two squares. And one brother worked on the part of the serpent that if it was a believe it part, so it had a real serpent cross section and what it would look like inside. And the other side was taking the other half of the legend that it was not a real serpent, it was a constructed one. And that's the part you're talking about.
What a neat idea. Very, very cool idea. Okay, so the theme this year?
The theme this year is transformations.
And do we have any inkling of what artists are going to do with that?
They really don't like to talk about it, Evan.
Yeah. That's what we've been finding.
They do like to know as soon as possible. They'll be contacting us the day after the event to say, what is the theme for next year?
How do you, if you're an artist and you think this would be a cool thing to participate in, how do you get involved with it?
You can go right to our website, perrychalkfestival.com, and there's an application there. We get information out throughout the community, but that's the good primary place to go.
And how many people apply versus how many actually do it?
We have probably total, if you count adults and kids that apply, probably about 55 that come in.
Okay.
And we end up with about, as I said, the 30 to 35.
Okay. Perry Chalk Art Festival is July 12th coming up here, but it is, and we've been talking about the chalk art portion of it, but it is an event constructed for everybody, and that if that feels cliche, it's not. And so let's talk about let's say you've got kids. What's going on for kids?
Well, kids can also chalk. So if you come unprepared, we have 1x1 squares and plenty of chalk for everyone to use because that's really that kind of medium people love to put their hands on and use. You might have used it in school. You might have used it on your driveway as a kid, so you have the opportunity to chalk at the festival in your own little square. If you were prepared and put an application in a couple weeks in advance, your kid ages 10 to 19 could be chalking in the youth competition. In addition to that, we have all the typical things you might expect at a kids' festival that has things for kids, a clown, face painting, bounce house, those kind of things.
So a lot going on for the kids all day, and as Megan has said, a lot of families like to pop in, check out the chalk art, and then kind of go and do some of these other things. But beyond that, there is, let's say you like craft fairs or unique gifts and things like that, and you want to check out stuff there. What's available for that?
Sure. We have about 60 vendors that'll be part of our extended street fair, as well as the Perry Farmers Market will be going on that day, coinciding with the event. So there'll be about the 20 usual Perry Farmers Market vendors.
Okay. Any music?
Oh, lots of music. I think that goes hand in hand with any kind of festival. So we have, I think, 6 different musical venues going on throughout the day.
And forgive me for sort of trying to figure this out on the fly, because the same day there's something else going on called the I just got the joke. Look at me. Tour de Paris.
Yes.
It's the Tour de Paris, and it is, what is it? Same day as the Chalk Art Festival. What is it?
Yeah. So we like to have lots of events to give people reasons to come to Perry, Evan. And so we know there are people out there that maybe chalk isn't their thing, but maybe they like to get their morning exercise. So we have a community bike ride. There are 2 lengths of events that you can participate in, and you just need to bring your bike, your helmet, and register in advance. One is a 17-mile loop around Silver Lake that you were describing before, that nice cozy size. So about 17 miles must be the diameter or the circumference of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also, for those that are really the weekend warrior type, there's a 53-mile bike through Letchworth Park. So you get your beautiful views and you get winded. And you get to ride into downtown Perry amidst all these festivities going on. You get a hero's welcome. They welcome you with cowbells and cheering.
Oh, very cool. And very Tour de France-like.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. What happens if it rains and really rains on Chalk Art Festival Day?
So if it really rains Chalk Art Festival Day, the bike ride still goes on. The Chalk Art Festival will be rescheduled. So if it's not raining in the morning, say it's clear, we have tarps. We can put those down. If we look at the forecasts 3 days in advance and it's, say, you know, 100% chance of rain, then we reschedule for the following Saturday.
But Jackie Billings Barlow, owner of Hole in the Wall Restaurant, we know, or we assume, the weather's going to be great that day. And that afternoon on July 12th, you guys are targeting foodies as well.
Absolutely, because, you know, as I know you realize, food is art. And we certainly subscribe to that idea. About 4 years ago, Megan approached me to get involved with the Chalk Art Festival. And she thought, do you think you could organize a food aspect of this? And if we have our connections out in our neighborhoods of other chefs that we know take a seasonal and artistic approach to food. And upon reaching out to them, they were more than happy to get involved. So on the same day, from 12 to 2:30, you can come to what's called the Taste of Summer, which is directly across the street from where the Chalkers are chalking. And you can take part in, you can have fine wine from the Finger Lakes, you can have local craft brews and local herbal teas, as well as about 6 to 7 restaurants within a 30-mile radius come and prepare 2 to 3 bite-sized dishes. The prerequisites are that they're seasonally inspired and interesting. So nothing you got, you know, no store-bought anything and no, you know, run-of-the-mill things. Let's be creative here.
For our listeners who've never been down to Perry, I said it's about 40 minutes from Rochester, but where exactly is it, Jackie?
You would take 390 South. You can get off at the Geneseo exit, exit 8, and continue on route, is that 20A?
You just get so used to driving it, you have no idea.
Is that 39? Route 39 heads right into Perry. So the road you're on, actually, if you keep following that south, you'll head directly into Perry. That will be our main street is Route 39, which you pick up right off of 390.
And again, forgive me, regarding the culinary aspect of it, when did Megan approach you about doing something?
2010.
Okay. So what are some of the cool things you've seen over the last few years outside of Travis's creations there?
So Brian Simmons from the Yard of Al, who I mentioned earlier, is also super creative and thinks outside of the box. And he's been with us from the beginning. So he's been one of two total chefs that have been there every time. And he comes up with some really fun ideas. He's done some like spicy pork tacos with different ingredients in them. And he did a soup 1 year, a neat chilled gazpacho. I think it was a watermelon gazpacho before people were doing watermelon. It was like right at the beginning of that. We also have Tim Knowles from Cuesta Lasagna in Mount Morris, which I don't know if you have heard of that restaurant, but they do Italian food really well. And he opened, actually, this was his first year being open, 2010. They were just opened in Mount Morris, which has been going through its own renaissance. And that's right off of 390 as mm-hmm. well. But he'll bring some Italian favorites and Italian spins on food down too. And he's been with us right from the beginning. I've seen peach and Riesling soups. I've seen lamb neck. Just sometimes it's off the wall. There's always a lot of vegetarian options. There's always a lot of care put into the dishes to make sure that you could easily take the meat out of them so that they would easily be vegetarian. I think each year that we've gotten thank you notes from vegetarians and vegans saying thank you for having something for us. So it's pretty diverse.
The Perry Chalk Art Festival, July 12th, and you have a young daughter already, and how old is your daughter?
She's 3 and a half, actually.
Okay, so is she the age where you'd be comfortable taking her to this kind of event? How young would you say is...
She's perfect for this event, for sure, because there's, as Megan mentioned, there's opportunities for her to get involved in chalk on her own. Looking at art is always a good thing to see, and this is definitely a medium that she can appreciate and understand, and then it can be a building block that you can take on to another venue, another event. She's a sucker for a bounce house. But we have a bounce house. There's not much else you have to say there. But yeah, and actually there's other vendors of food, too, that have more kid-friendly options for food, too, so...
And before we wrap up with Jackie, we open by asking you about your favorite meal, your most memorable meal you've ever had. What is one restaurant that you and Travis have never been to that you cannot wait to get to. It doesn't matter where it is, by the way.
Yeah. So I really want to go to Chicago to Alinea because their food looks just incredible. And we've always wanted to go to one of Thomas Keller's restaurants, too. We are disciples, I think, of Thomas Keller. So I think Alinea in Chicago, and then we're not fussy. Somewhere with Thomas Keller.
it doesn't have to be French Laundry and spending a fortune and waiting forever to get in.
Well, we were dreaming.
We can all dream.
We were dreaming. I've been to Bouchon in Manhattan. That was a good close second.
Yeah,
for sure.
Very good. Your husband really is very impressed with what he does in the kitchen. But it's always fun to talk to you because you're really the glue of Perry.
I don't know that I can take that credit. It's nice of you to
no,
say so.
You are.
But one of many. Perry is unique. So. Perry is lucky. So I mentioned that when we first bought the restaurant, Perry's downtown was in sad shape. But then nearly immediately after we left, things started happening. Things started changing. Megan Hauser, who's the chair of this committee, her husband is an architect who, and her family have really brought a community-oriented spirit to Perry and inspire people who have had professional lives elsewhere and never knew they could stretch themselves to in a volunteer capacity. They do that in Perry. So I don't think I'm the glue. I think I'm just lucky to have come from a place that attracts a lot of hardworking, community-minded people.
Well, let me grab Megan Hauser and just focus before we wrap up the conversation on this Arts Friday about what's been going on and what is coming up in Perry. We've been talking about the Chalk Art Festival and the Biking the Tour de Perry, both on July 12th, but all summer. There is a series of events. Summer Saturdays, the art series there, and starting June 21st with the market's opening day, you love putting music and different activities together with this, don't you?
It's a celebration, Evan. You know, it's one thing to have a farmer's market, but this is really a community gathering spot for Perry. So we have 450 to 600 people come down every Saturday to just take part in this, be with their fellow community members. Sit in the sun, listen to music. It's a great event to be part of.
I can't get through all of it, but give me some of the highlights coming up. And again, it starts June 21st and goes all the way through September, end of September. Yep. What are some of the highlights to you?
Well, every Saturday we will have music from 10 to 12. We do have a couple special days where there are events going on. On the 5th of July, there's a brand new event that's co-opting onto the market, and that's the Buffalo Chicken Wing event. And they'll have a wing off with judging by community members as well as judges. And later that evening, they're going to have a screening of the Great Chicken Wing Hunt movie with the director there to speak about it.
Thank you for taking the time to come in and tell us about the Perry Chalk Art Festival. We appreciate that.
We'd be glad to see people come down and join us.
Our thanks to Megan Hauser, Jackie Billings-Barlow, Jen Regan this hour, and so many others who have joined us. And thank you for listening to Member Supported Public Radio. I'm Evan Dawson, and we'll talk to you again on a Monday.